manager of the Lakers, Mitch Kupchak. Mitch, thanks a lot for coming on. How are you?
Great, Steve. John, thanks for having me on.
We appreciate you coming on, Mitch. And I would accuse Steve of using the wrong word. Traditionally, quiet is probably not the right word. I would imagine you made a lot of calls, but you didn't make a deal. How close were you guys to making a deal?
I think we came, you know, relatively close in terms of, you know, having conversations that, you know, you get a feeling can lead somewhere.
Right.
You know, a lot of it's, you know, just touching base with other GMs and, you know, trying to get a feel for, you know, what they're thinking. And although you're very busy and there's a lot of phone calls going back and forth, you kind of have a feel that it's not going to lead to anything. But, you know, our take going into the, you know, the trade deadline, you know, we felt very comfortable with the group. We didn't feel it was necessary to, you know, break up, you know, the core of the group. But, you know, we did want to look at, you know, just managing our roster as well as possible and trying to keep an eye out to the future a little bit. And that was our, you know, approach going into the trade deadline. We didn't expect, and certainly we weren't looking to do anything drastic.
How did the success of these last four regular season games that the Lakers have won without Kobe Bryant on the floor impact the way you approach today, if at all?
I wouldn't think that it impacted it at all, to be honest with you. You know, I think it helped a lot of our bench players in their confidence because they got a lot of minutes and they produced well. Some of our guys are going to be free agents this summer. So I think, you know, the better they can play, then I think the more valuable they make their futures. So I think that's all good. In terms of, you know, our approach to the trade deadline probably didn't have too much effect one way or the other.
Mitch Kupchak, Lakers general manager, is our guest. Mitch, let our listeners in a little bit on the process. I'm curious, for example, there are 29 other GMs. Roughly, how many of those guys did you talk to over the past three? Did you talk to all of them, just a handful? And do you talk to them at all hours of the day? Is it just done during business hours? Or how does that all work?
I think I spoke to everyone. They may have been one or two that I didn't touch base with, but I believe I came pretty close to talking to everyone. And your cell phone is always on, you know, because of the time change. You know, the East Coast and the Central Time and Mountain Time. You know, you're at home or you're in the office or you're in your car when they're going home or you're coming into the office and vice versa. So, you know, you communicate all the time. And as you approach, you know, a deal or a deadline, you know, certainly you have your cell phone with you at all times, you know, when you're not in the office. And quite frankly, you know, many times you're in the office and the first phone call that somebody will make to you in today's world, they really don't try the office anymore. They go to your cell because they
right.
know your cell is probably a better chance to get you.
Well, I know, for example, Mitch, because you come on the road occasionally and I know you work out every day. Like, so a deadline week, do you like have your phone even when you go to the gym?
Yeah, I don't think that changes. yeah, I mean, I bring that with me, you know, as you know, during the playoffs or during the regular season as well.
Right.
You know, anything can happen during the course of a season. You have a player that gets hurt or Gary Vee has to reach out to me or Phil needs to reach out to me. So it doesn't really matter whether it's the trade deadline approaching or just the regular season. You know, like most people, the cell phone is an extension of your body now.
Yeah.
Mitch, what did you think specifically of Cleveland's acquisition of Antoine Jameson?
Well, it remains to be seen. But I will say that I think the two teams of the contending teams that helped themselves going into the playoffs, I think one of them was Cleveland, and of course the other one was Dallas. Most of the other moves that were made, I think, were looking towards the summer.
You right.
know, and I think it's going to be a very, very interesting summer, you know, to see how all these teams, you know, deal with, you know, all this financial freedom that they've created for themselves.
Mitch, you've been in the league as a player and as an executive for most of your adult life, all of it, actually. And I'm curious, just, I know you can't, by rule, talk specifically about other teams' players, but
right.
there are a handful of guys and everybody knows who I'm talking about, major, major, big-time max contract guys, are any of them going to move? Do you have a feel for? Do you think that we see a Shaquille O'Neal-type movement like when you guys were able to pry him out of Orlando? Do you see that happening this summer?
John, it's a very interesting question. You know, I believe there are seven or maybe eight teams, you know, based on where we are today in the NBA, that created a lot of cap space for themselves for this upcoming summer.
Right.
And if you assume certain, you know, of the high-profile free agents stay where they are, you know, which is very possible, a couple of those guys may stay where they are, and then maybe the other ones actually do look to make a move, there aren't enough, you know, high-profile free agents to go around. So you have a lot of teams that, you know, now all of a sudden have a lot of space, and maybe they didn't get rewarded with a free agent that they thought they would be. So, you know, I don't know how that's going to shake out. It's going to be hard to have all that cap space if you're a team. And then this summer, if you lose out on a free agent, say, well, I'm going to hold it over till the next summer. You know, I'm not sure the fan base, you know, would buy into something like that. I think, in general, a fan base would buy into, okay, this season didn't work out the way we hoped it to work out. You know, we're going to go for it this summer. I think a rare example of a team or a franchise that was able to put it off a couple of years is New York. You know, they've been planning for this summer now for over 2 years. But I think that's the exception.
Last thing for me, at least, Mitch. How surprised are you that this team has been able to win four consecutive regular season games and some really tough ones with Kobe Bryant sidelined with the ankle injury?
It's a pleasant surprise. You know, Kobe is such an important part of this team, you know, and we've just not had the opportunity, you know, to play without him. You know, he's played so many games in a row up until four games ago that you don't know how a team is going to react when he's not around. So it was a very pleasant surprise. You know, quite frankly, in Portland, I think we were due. In Utah, you know, they ended our streak about 2 months ago, so maybe you can say, well, it was our turn to end their streak. But, you know, the win against San Antonio at home was a big win. And you really can't look to another reason why we won that game other than we played well. I don't think we played that well against Golden State. So it's a pleasant surprise. I certainly wouldn't want to see how we do in the next 10 games without Kobe. I'm very happy to have won the four. And now let's get Kobe back.
All right, Mitch, last thing. Somebody pointed out to us yesterday, and I should preface this by saying that Kobe has made it clear this is where he wants to be, and you've made it clear that you want him here for the rest of his career. So having said that, somebody pointed out that technically Kobe could opt out if he wanted to. What's holding up his extension, or maybe a better way to ask it is, what does that entail for you guys to get that done?
Well, we've both agreed to keep our discussions between each other private. And, you know, our position and, you know, our take on it is that Kobe started his career in Los Angeles and that he should and that he will end his career in Los Angeles. But I'm not in a position for several different reasons, you know, to actually discuss, you know, what we've talked about, you know, for the last month or two, other than to say, you know, he should end up as a Laker, and I think he will.
Good. All right. All right. Thanks, Mitch, for your time, and good luck against the Celtics. Appreciate you coming on.
Okay, guys.
Thanks,
John,
Mitch.
Steve, thanks for having me on.
All right. There's Mitch Kupchak, who we spoke to just a little while ago. The Lakers make no moves at the trade deadline, but it was not for lack of trying. The Celtics make one move. And I think this has now become, I think it's final.
Nate Robinson, it's final.
When I talked to the guy from ESPNBoston.com a while ago, Chris Forsberg, he said they were still crossing T's and dotting I's, but we assume that that's the deal. The big move, of course, Cleveland makes the big move yesterday. They acquire Antoine Jameson and give up Zydrunas Ilgauskas, maybe. And then, you know, Dallas made their move early as well, as you heard Mitch talk about. Dallas made their move for Caron Butler, that's a solid play for them.
Right. And I think that Dallas, as Mitch mentioned, Dallas and Cleveland improved.
Houston, I thought, if they had not have given up Carl Landry. I thought that had potential, but now it looks more lateral to me.
Yeah, Landry's really good and kills the Lakers.
Yeah.
Kills them.
All right, coming up next for you. And by the way, top of the hour, we're giving away a pair of tickets to... When are we doing it? Coming up, we're giving
425.
Away 425. We're giving away a pair of tickets for Lakers Celtics tonight. Make sure you stay tuned for that 425. And next for you, one of the biggest Celtics fans we know. We're letting him in the building anyway on Celtics Lakers Day. Donnie Wahlberg.
He was coming anyway, whether we invited him or not.
Exactly. He was just going to show up. Mason and Ireland Show 710 ESPN, ESPNLosAngeles.com. Mason and Ireland Show 710 ESPN, ESPNLosAngeles.com. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., we'll have it for you live. Tiger Woods speaks for the first time in 90 days. He'll end his Garbo act, right? That was the old-time actress who didn't talk forever and ever and finally did. I don't think she ever did, actually.
Who, Greta Garbo?
Yeah, I don't think
she ever
did speak. A little bit like Sandy Koufax, who finally is going to speak.
Yeah, a week from Sunday.
A week from Sunday. Tiger will speak. And we just got this report several sources are telling People magazine, obviously angling for a Pulitzer, that Tiger Woods plans to return to golf by playing the Tavistock Cup, a tightly controlled...
Oh, that's at Isleworth, Isleworth. That's where he lives.
...tightly controlled competition that would mark a fairly low-key comeback into the golf world. He has made it clear that he's planning to play... says a source close to the Tavistock Cup. So that would be March 22nd, 23rd. And if he does play, he'll be heavily guarded. So, and guarded is a good way to describe the way he's going to be tomorrow because nobody's going to ask any questions. It's a press conference without any conference. Joining us right now is probably the biggest Boston Celtics fan that we are on speaking terms with.
Yes. We actually like Donnie Wahlberg very much, despite the fact that he openly flaunts the fact that he not only is a Celtic fan, but are you still friends with Paul Pierce?
Yeah, Paul's my man.
All right.
I went up to the game in Sacramento the other night, and I was invited on the team plane back, and Paul was the first one to offer me an invite. So,
well, that's very nice.
Very cool.
Nice. And has he been somewhat insufferable since winning the 3-point contest?
You know what? I love Paul to death. I think he's the best, but he has been.
Yeah, you can tell.
He's letting everybody know.
Nobody thought he could do it, and now he's letting everybody know that they were wrong.
Yeah, he told me I didn't think he could do it, and I mean, I thought he had as good a chance as anyone else there. But yeah, he's definitely enjoying it.
We should mention, Donnie has been out on tour with New Kids on the Block a lot as an actor. You probably know him from the Saw movies. You did a bunch of those and done a bunch of television stuff. What are you up to? What are you working on at this right now?
Right now, I'm working very hard on my Celtics courtside presence.
Nice.
To be honest with you.
Nice.
You got good ones tonight?
I got my ticket right here in my hand.
Did you get courtside?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'll be right next to the Celtics bench.
Now this is the song you guys did, I think, originally. Didn't you do this for the Celtics?
We did. There was it's a very little known story that we were trying to get a, you know, hustle to make money. We were poor, poor kids growing up in Boston. We didn't have any money. Our music producer didn't have any money. And so the idea with that song was we wanted to make a theme song for the Celtics and try to, you know, sell it to them for, you know, a couple $100 and maybe, you know, have some pocket money. And,
right.
Wow.
Yeah. And it became a number one record and the title song of our biggest selling album. So.
Now they're hanging old more than they're hanging tough now, just
although,
from my observation.
See, now,
old,
Johnny,
old like Michael
could,
Jordan was.
Yeah, you know, but you know can weigh in on something here. See, I think everybody, I wrote a blog on ESPNLosAngeles.com about encouraging people not to sleep on the Celtics. I've looked at the whole Eastern Conference. I've seen all these Eastern Conference teams play. And I think if the Celtics have all their people,
mm-hmm.
they're the second best team in the East. Cleveland's the best team. But I think they could beat any other team. I think they would beat Orlando in a 7-game series. I think they would beat Atlanta. Everybody mm-hmm. says, well, Atlanta's won all 4 games against Boston. Boston is not a team built to win 65 games like they did 2 years ago. I think they're a team built to win a 7-game series if they can stay healthy. Am I overrating your team?
I can tell you this. I think that the Celtics agree with you. And that's proven by the fact that they made a trade and, you know, they basically swapped parts. I mean, Nate Robinson.
Nate Robinson's better than Eddie House.
He's better than Eddie House, but Eddie House, you know, I don't know that he serves exactly, Nate Robinson serves exactly what they needed, but I think what the Celtics believed they needed was a spark plug. And I think the best way to describe Nate Robinson is a spark plug. I think the Celtics believe if they're healthy, if everyone's, you know, in decent shape come playoff time and they put on that, you know, that veteran team, the way the Lakers used to do when Shaq was there, you know, they could turn it on come playoff time. Eventually that stopped working for them. But, you know, for a time, Shaq could turn it on come playoff time and sort of, you know, his numbers went through the roof. He started playing hard. And, you know, I think a lot of veteran teams do that. And I think that's the hope on the Celtics part, you know. Otherwise they would have traded Ray Allen and made some moves and tried to do something drastic to really shake it up. So I think they believe they have one more shot with this team, and I'm inclined to agree, you know, to a point. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I want to see them get out there and start playing better soon. You know, I don't want them to wait too long, but they've been struggling a little bit lately. But I do agree that anyone can still come out of the East. And the Celtics, it's all about styles. Styles make fights come playoff time.
Right.
And the Celtics, for whatever reason, they play always tough against the Lakers. Even though the Lakers have more talent than the Celtics, you know, they've pretty much reversed position from 2 years ago when the Celtics won. The Lakers are a deeper team with more talent than the Celtics, but the Celtics just seem to match up really good with the Lakers and always give them a hard
time.
There
are not a lot of Celtics believers out there. Grown up in Boston and has always lived and died with the Boston teams.
And we like them anyway for some reason. We haven't figured out why we like you.
Give them a pass.
You're a nice guy. But now we're back to the Celtics. You know, the big talk today, Dime, even the show before ours was saying, well, if the Celtics don't win tonight, if they can't beat the Lakers without Kobe, then they're just in a tailspin. They're circling the drain. I get back to my original point. I think this Celtics team is built just to get into the playoffs and see if they can get people healthy. Will you be devastated if they lose tonight?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, Mario.
Hey.
There we go.
Boom.
Wow.
There we go.
Thanks.
See, I wanted to say first, I know why you guys like me, because I'm honest.
Right, yeah.
I'm
that's
a Celtics
very true.
Fan, but I'm honest.
It's very true. You always have called it what it is.
And I may be the only person in Southern California that's not surprised that the Lakers are winning without Kobe, because I thought when they got our test, they would be good enough without Kobe to win the West.
Right.
With that lineup. And now certainly with Kobe, they're good enough to win everything. But, the thing, I agree. I mean, look, nothing really matters till the playoffs. It doesn't matter who wins what game when. I mean, you know, the Celtics and Lakers, the old great rivalry they had in the 80s. The regular season games were exciting, but, you know, nobody really thought, okay, we're definitely going to win the championship because we beat them in the regular season. And that never mattered. And the great teams and the great players take it to another level come playoff time. I do think the Celtics are going to show up tonight and give it a good effort. And if they don't win without Kobe playing, I don't think it matters. I think they're actually, I kind of think the Lakers might really kind of win the game tonight. And I'm a big Celtic fan. I want them to win bad. I want all my Lakers friends.
They're playing really well.
Lakers are playing great. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think Tim Duncan said, you know, we prepare to stop Kobe and he's not there. We didn't know what to do with the Lakers. I mean, it could be kind of a cop out, but at the same time, the Lakers have to turn it up a notch without Kobe. And they have great players on the team without Kobe. So it's very likely they could win tonight, but I don't think it matters. Celtics showed they could still play with the Lakers a few weeks ago in Boston. And, you know, and Kobe showed he's still a great player and made a great shot. So.
John and I have a friend named David Locke, who is the play-by-play guy for the Utah Jazz. And crazy guy. He's a crazy statistical analysis.
He's a univac guy. Yeah. He's like a walking computer.
He's crazy. The last time he was here, and I don't think you were here, John, but it was a really good point that he made. He said that all NBA players in history, with a few exceptions, have seen their careers decline at 35,000 career regular season minutes, and they've basically been done at 40,000 career regular season minutes, which is an interesting idea. He had a bunch of stuff to back it up, but Kevin Garnett just passed 40,000 career regular season minutes. Ray Allen is sixth in the league, about 37,000 career regular season minutes. You know, I think that one of the things that needs to happen for the Celtics to be a force in the postseason is, and obviously injury is doing this to some degree, but you've got to start marshaling these minutes. You've got to lighten up.
But I think Doc is doing it. I mean, I went to the game the other night. I was literally sitting on the bench. I was talking to players, you know, during the game. They were, you know, a foot away from me. And I the first thing I noticed was, KG and Ray and Paul were sitting down, you know, like 85% of the second quarter. I mean, they stood up. Rondo was even sitting out a lot of the second quarter. He stood up with 2 minutes left in the second quarter or 3 minutes left. And it's funny. My brother was sitting next to me. He was like, how do they know when to stand up? Because I didn't hear the coach call him. I said, he might have just told him, sit down. You're coming in with 3 minutes left. I mean, they right. didn't play that much the other night. I don't know. Again, and that's the thing that, you know, everyday fans, we get caught up in every little thing. It's
right.
like, oh, my God, we lost tonight to Utah. That means we can't do this, and we're never going to win, and Utah's going to beat us in the playoffs. It doesn't mean anything because you don't even know what's really – sometimes, you know, if we're not really paying attention and studying the game and students of the game, we don't really know what exactly the coach is up to. I thought, you know, Paul didn't play great the other night. Ray Allen didn't play great the other night. KG didn't play great the other night. And they didn't play a lot the other night. And the Celtics pulled out a victory. It was tougher than it should have been against Sacramento. And maybe if they played 40 minutes each instead of, you know, 30, it might have been different. But I do think they're starting to ration their minutes now.